Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Rob Brown Show, final hour on a Monday. Get started right now, 3 minutes after the 2 o'clock hour. I am Rob Brown, back at the network studio. My man DJ Tim on the ones and twos, scratching it up for you today. Having a killer show, man. Coming up in the next segment, Colin Bester of NASCAR will join us. He is the newest member of NASCAR's insider team, and we will talk to him a little bit about the track difficulties that went down this weekend at Indianapolis, because that race had some disaster attached to it. We will talk about that coming up here in just a few minutes from right now. As we get there, we talked a little bit about it. Breaking news over the weekend as the NFL team in Washington, D.C. announced that they were putting together an exploratory committee to move on behalf of changing the name of the football program. What's in a name, man? What does that do? What does that mean? Look, I'm going to leave my my personal feelings out of this to the best of my ability. Although, look, I was told when I was brought here to ESPN Upstate and to the Upstate region that we're not supposed to leave our personal feelings out. We are entitled to our opinions as hosts. Just like you as listeners are entitled to yours, and we use them to spark conversation. The changing of the name of the D.C.-based football team to something that is a little more, I hate this term because it comes with negative stigma attached, but politically correct. I think socially correct is probably a more accurate description of the conversation that's in place right now. I know it upsets a lot of people, but I, for one, and I just said I was going to leave my personal feelings out. That lasted 20 seconds. I, for one, think it's the right decision. I think it's time, right? Like, I think it's time for that to move on. And I found it interesting because a lot of people have spoken out about it, up to including Ron Rivera, the former Carolina coach, who is now obviously the signal caller for the D.C. Native American football squad. He has spoken out about it as well. Cleveland Indians are looking at changing their name as well. Looks like they are going to potentially put together an exploratory committee sometime in the future as well. Here is manager Terry Francona speaking out about that change.
Forward and not just say, hey, this is, you know, I don't know. It's a very difficult subject. It's also delicate. And sometimes like the way I think I leave the American League in errors made in life, which not necessarily proud of you. I guess, you know, even at my age, you don't want to be too old to learn or to realize that maybe I've been ignorant of some things and to be ashamed of it and to try to be better.
So there's the first half of Terry Francona's take. Here's another.
You know, I've been thinking about it and actually thinking about it before we put out that statement. I know in the past when I've been asked about whether it's our name or the Chief Wahoo, I think I would usually answer and say, I know that we're never trying to be disrespectful. And I still feel that way. But I don't think that's a good enough answer today.
And then finally, this
I was happy that we are going to, I mean, Chris and I and Cherney, we've talked about this for years, you know, by ourselves. Doesn't have to be a meeting. I'm glad that we're going to be open to listening, because I think that's probably the most important thing right now, is being willing to listen, not necessarily just talk.
There's Terry Francona, manager of the Cleveland Indians, in the discussion that the Indians started this past weekend when they said that they are looking into changing the name of the franchise. Could be the very last year that the Major League Baseball's Cleveland Indians exist. On the flip side, it looks like the D.C.-based football team is on its way to potentially changing before this year starts. We could have the Washington, D.C. Red Tails, which appears to be the betting favorite for the D.C.'s team's new name starting this year. Of course, the Red Tails paying homage to the Tuskegee Airmen, the black flying unit that became famous for their heroic actions during World War II. Dwayne Haskins, quarterback for Washington's team, has come out and said that that is his choice of name. If it was up to him, that's the name that he would pick. Look, people get very attached to their football teams, no doubt about it. It's why we have tens of thousands of sports talk-based stations all around the country. And when you identify with something, as long as you would have identified with that name of that football team, with the name of the Cleveland baseball team, etc., I can understand how it is emotionally distressing to be told that that name is going away, to be told that the name that you have identified with for as long as you've been a fan of that team or a fan of that sport, that name is no longer going to exist, right? And I get the people, I get the understanding, or I should say that I understand people who have an emotional reaction to that decision. But there's no doubt that those names are controversial. There's no doubt that people who support those names are going to have an emotional reaction to that decision. That being said, I am not shocked to see that those names are likely going to be changed sometime in the near future. The Atlanta Braves have not gone as far. The Bravos have said that as of right now, they are not examining changing that name. I had some people ask me over the weekend, well, what about FSU? And I think that this is, again, where you have to start putting nuance into discussions. You have to put these discussions in context. Florida State gets a pass in this discussion, I think, because FSU has a working relationship with the Seminole Tribe, right? They actually have the blessings of the Seminole Tribe to play under that moniker. The name that the Native Americans-based football team in Washington, D.C. plays under is by definition a racial slur, right? You don't have to agree with that. You don't have to like it, but it is by definition a racial slur. The term Indians is a term that was applied incorrectly to the indigenous Americans when Europeans started showing up. I don't believe it is a racial slur in any stretch of the imagination, but it is not the it is not an appropriate name for that group. And so, therefore, I understand that being changed. Braves, I'm a little less. I have a little less conviction for the change of that name, right? We understand the concept of Braves within Native American culture. Same with Chiefs, right? The Kansas City Chiefs. That to me, and I am not a Native American. I do have limited Native American blood, but I am not claiming to have any right to speak on behalf of that community. But I don't feel like the name Chiefs, like the name Braves, certainly not the name Seminoles, has the same connotation that Indians do, or the name that the Washington, D.C.-based NFL team carries. So That's why there's that. Let's see, at ESPN, I see why the Redskins would change their name in today's social climate, but when does this end? I heard that Notre Dame is considering changing their mascot. I wonder if any of these suggested name changes, statue removals, etc., are actually coming from the ethnic groups directly affected or just current social pressure from Pittsburgh, Tony. Again, the Redskins name is a racial slur, okay? It just is. That's not a to me, with all due respect, that's not really up for debate, right? I've never heard anybody use that term outside of the football team. Nobody's ever used that term as a term of respect or endearment. As far as the Irish go with Notre Dame, I think it's less the Irish and more the caricature, right? Like the caricature of the Fighting Irish plays on a stereotype of Irish people. And I am Irish, okay? I can speak out on this one. My family is from Cork County, Ireland. We have documented them coming off the boat in New York. So I am Irish. I can speak on this part. I think it's more the caricature, right? Like the caricature of a drunk fighting leprechaun. I don't think that and I could be wrong on this. I don't think the conversation in that regard is about changing the name Irish. I think it's about getting rid of the caricature. I think it's about getting rid of the caricature of the Irish as this drunk fighting leprechaun who hammers down a bunch of whiskey and gets into bar fights. I think they're trying to drop that label, and I don't see why anybody would have a problem with that, to tell you the truth. All right, let's take a real quick break. When we come back, Colin Bester is a NASCAR insider and will join us on the program after an eventful weekend there at NASCAR over the weekend at Indianapolis. He has some stuff to say about the tires, about the track, and where NASCAR moves forward after a letdown race at Indianapolis. That's coming up in the next segment of the show on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. Final hour rolls on right here on ESPN Upstate. Great to be with you, Rob and Tim, on the board today. Hope you'll be a part of the show, 844-477-3776. But before we get back to your calls, we jump on the phone line now and welcome in a young man you will be hearing quite a bit from here on the Rob Brown Show moving forward to talk a little NASCAR, all kinds of motorsports, as he'll be covering all kinds of events for NASCAR moving forward. He is NASCAR insider Colin Bester on the program. Colin, what's up, brother? First and foremost, man, congratulations on the new opportunity with NASCAR, buddy. I don't know if this is the official first announcement, and I'm sorry if I'm breaking news you didn't want broken, but I'm excited for you. Good to have you, pal.
Good to be here, Rob, but I mean, I've told my mom. Does that count? I think that counts.
I mean, technically it's breaking news, even if it is to a very limited demographic. I really just don't want to break it if it hasn't been broken by the big dogs yet. But I also don't care, man. Colin actually comes from the ticket down in the Florida Panhandle, which is the same station that yours truly got his start on which means you are off to a great start. And you know, I'm glad to share that background with you, man. I'm super happy for you, super proud of you. I know that racing is a passion of yours, so to be able to take a step up in the NASCAR ranks, that's a big deal, man. You ought to be proud of yourself. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, I've heard about you a lot more than you've heard about me. I listened to your show when you were on down here at the Ticket Days, and I remember you doing a brief stint in TV. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I saw you on the local news covering sports, covering some local interest stories around the area. So I've heard about Rob Brown probably before you even heard about me. But, man, I'm so glad to come from a position where many people have gone on to find success. I guess it was just my turn to find some success, and I'm happy to be in the position that I'm afforded to be in.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, congratulations to you, and well, I know we'll be having you on the show very frequently as NASCAR continues. I want to talk about the race that went down this weekend, but before we get there, talk a little bit about Jimmy Johnson. He got his positive COVID-19 test on Friday, knocked him out for at least this week, probably next week as well. The seven-time champ loses a couple of opportunities to pick up that first checkered flag in his swan song season. Just your thoughts on Jimmy Johnson, how you feel for him right now, having to sit at home and watch Indianapolis, one of his favorite racetracks, and lose the opportunity. Still has one more as the season will end with Indy this year. But just your overall thoughts on Jimmy Johnson with the news that broke over the weekend of his positive coronavirus test.
You know, my first reaction was, you know, how can things get any worse slash better for Jimmy? Starting off this season, the expectations were high. You know, he's a former Cup Series champion in his final ride. The emotions that would be around him winning and locking himself into a playoff spot, it would be huge. It would be huge for the sport. It would be huge for Jimmy and huge for Hendrick Motorsports. You know, for the past couple of years, Jimmy Johnson hasn't really performed at the caliber we thought Jimmy Johnson would be at. Granted, I think a lot of people look back to Jimmy's career, and he wrecked at Pocono a couple of years ago. Brakes went out going into turn one. Really hard to hit. I think it was the hardest hit I've ever seen out of Jimmy Johnson in his career. And a lot of people point to that incident as the turning point to where Jimmy Johnson started taking the downhill turn. He hasn't won since that season, and I believe it was the 2016-2017 season that happened. So for Jimmy, this was the rebound year. This was the final year to go out and get a championship. Looking at the standings right now, Rob, he's currently in the top 16 in points. And if NASCAR, which they probably would, grant him a waiver for missing a start due to a non race-related incident. You know, it's sort of like Ryan Newman when he was in that vicious wreck at Daytona. They granted him a championship waiver, so if he did qualify to get in the playoffs, he would absolutely get a shot to run for the championship. But for Jimmy Johnson, going to Indy, he won the Brickyard 400 two times in his career. Each year he won it, he won the championship. He's shown speed this year, and that's the worst part about Jimmy Johnson getting this positive test, is that he's shown speed. He's led laps. He's been competitive. And certainly when you take a big name in NASCAR like Jimmy Johnson, you take him out of the sport for one race, I think you could clearly see that Hendrick team, that 48 team, had very low morale going into the Brickyard 400. And going forward, you know, it looks like, you know, for 2 weeks is the proper protocol for a COVID-19 issue to get that resolved. So hopefully Jimmy probably won't be back unless something happens this week at Kentucky, but he should be back in time for the All-Star race at Bristol.
Speaking with Colin Bester, a NASCAR insider here on the Rob Brown Show and ESPN Upstate. Let's talk a little bit about the race that took place this weekend. And obviously you had a incident on pit road we'll talk about in just a second. Kevin Harvick and his resurgence this season, we'll talk about that. But the big story from the weekend, I think, was the fact that these drivers had so many problems with tires. I mean, the Toyotas as a whole were having a problem. Some people have chalked it up to Goodyear having a bad batch of tires, having a bad product overall. Some people chalked it up to the diamond graded surface that they had there on Indianapolis Motor Speedway this weekend. But the one thing that cannot be argued is that it was a bad, bad weekend as far as the tires were concerned there for the stock cars. Just your thoughts on that overall. I mean, we saw it cost Denny Hamlin the race as he had a right tire go down on him and put him into the wall in a bad accident with just a couple of laps left to go that led to Kevin Harvick getting the overtime win. What are the conversations like on the inside as far as what happened with tire wear and flats this weekend at Indy?
From what I heard, they used the same tire compound at Pocono the week prior before coming to Indianapolis. You know, they're sort of the same style of track. You get off turn one in Pocono, and turn two is modeled after the turns at Indianapolis, that long straight going into a 90-degree corner. To be honest, I've been a very negative proponent for the Brickyard 400 the past couple of years. The racing has been going downhill, and I don't know if you caught the Xfinity Series race the day before on the road course. That was an amazing finish, especially Chase Briscoe going three wide into one, clearing that, and then taking his fifth win of the year at the road course. To be honest with you, I go back and forth on tires in NASCAR. We've had a lot of issues at Indy, and certainly bringing a harder compound, one that doesn't wear as much as a softer compound, would help the tire survivability in these races. But to be honest with you, in most races this year with a hard compound, and because of a harder compound, the tires don't fall off as much. It leads to very bad single file racing with no passing. So I feel like NASCAR is on a double-edged sword. Do we create a tire that has fall off, but do we risk the injury? Do we risk injury for any of these drivers? Losing a tire, a right front tire going 195 miles an hour into a 90-degree left-hand corner is probably not the best thing to ever happen to any driver. You saw it happen to Denny Hamlin with seven to go. It happened with Eric Jones. It happened with Alex Bowman and William Byron had lost a left front, but I think that was due to a pit road mistake, not just the bad tire. To be honest with you, I really thought that Indy for the July 4th weekend for NASCAR was to revitalize the race and get fans back at the racetrack. And due to coronavirus, that's not going to happen this year. But I think NASCAR is going to take a good look at the Brickyard 400. I don't think they're ever going to stop racing at the Brickyard since Roger Penske just bought Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He's going to work and make that race successful. But you look at what Cup drivers have said over the weekend, and they don't want to race at the road course at the Brickyard. They want to race the oval because, you know, we're the top-tier motorsport as well. This is a track that has held champions in IndyCar. Dale Earnhardt won here, Jeff Gordon won here, Tony Stewart, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch. The list of champions who have won here goes on and on and on. So the thing about the Brickyard and the future of it is, you know, probably about NASCAR's schedule. If you take a race away, where do you go? Where do you replace that race with? And there's currently not a track right now that would be a suitable replacement for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah, it's one of the crown jewels of NASCAR, and you know, look, it's an interesting track, and I for one have been a proponent for years. I think NASCAR should ditch the 1.5 mile tri-ovals. They just get boring and have a bunch of different interesting races. Pocono last week, Indianapolis, Bristol, Martinsville, etc. But look, one thing is for certain, which is whatever racetracks you're going to decide on, there has got to be a cohesive relationship between the equipment the drivers are approved to race with and the raceway itself. I got curious as to the diamond grading and if NASCAR had run that before, and it turns out they have. It's not a frequently used type of grading on these racetracks, but they have used it. But it seems it almost inevitably causes problems whenever it gets used on a racing surface for NASCAR. Do you think NASCAR might have a change in the way that they make decisions in terms of what surface gradings will be allowed? Will we see perhaps at some point NASCAR allow competing tires to come in, maybe let Firestone, who makes the tires for F1, etc.? Will we see changes made to NASCAR, a sport that traditionally loves to sit back on its history and tradition, or is this just going to kind of be a blip on the radar and NASCAR moves past it?
you know, ever since they started using the diamond grading, and I can't remember the year they started using it. It was late, early 2000s, early 2010s that started. And the first race back, it was pretty much you could not run green flag laps for more than 10 laps before tire failures were an issue. And it got to the point where NASCAR called multiple competition cautions, which probably led to the decline of the Brickyard 400. If we're going to have every 10 laps a competition caution, then why are we really racing? But I think there's an issue with the tires that we are kind of overlooking, is the fact that these teams have had no practice time whatsoever. They set up the car back in Charlotte, North Carolina. They bring them to Indy. They bring them to all the tracks they go to. They unload the trucks, put the cars on the grid, and then we start racing. To be honest with you, I think a practice session, maybe an hour-long practice session, would have helped these teams with their tire issues. But listening to Ronnie Childers' radio yesterday during the Brickyard 400, he was talking about Denny Hamlin. And at the end of every single run, his tires were corroding, getting to the reinforcement layer of the tires, which with heat and excessive force would cause them to fail. So Denny Hamlin set up his car very aggressively, it seemed like, to get the most speed out of his car. But when you go high risk, when you go high reward, you get high risk. And that's what I think happened with Denny Hamlin with seven to go.
Talking with Colin Bester, a NASCAR insider, as we break down what happened at Indianapolis. The entrance to pit row where you had the big pileup towards the start and that competition start of the race yesterday at the Brickyard was nothing short of catastrophic for that race, man. You had some high-level contenders that were caught up in it, and I know that Indianapolis has a very unique pit. I think it's got the narrowest pit on any of the NASCAR tracks. Is that going to potentially change NASCAR's stance on practices, right? Because I don't know that that happens if some of the drivers involved maybe had a couple of laps worth of practice to practice entering pit lane, getting in and out of their stalls carefully and comfortably on a much narrower pit stall. Any chance NASCAR maybe steps back from that and decides to try to install some sort of even abbreviated practice rounds for these drivers? Because every time we interview a driver, that seems to be the first thing that they bring up, is the fact that they're basically showing up, climbing in the car, and running a race.
See, I don't know, and I wish I knew more, but to me, the people who I have contacts with and the sources close to me, those conversations should be happening either today or tomorrow to look at pit road. You know, this is the first time an incident like this has happened in NASCAR, and gosh, I don't know how long where a pit road member was seriously injured like that. I think you have to go back to 2012, 2011, when Brad Keselowski at Pocono overshot his box and hit a couple of pit crew members. Luckily, in both cases, they're fine. They were treated and released from the medical centers, and they report back to Charlotte for further evaluation. But Indy is – what do you do? Well, how do you fix Indy's pit road? This is because you can't take the outside of it and move it farther away. You will decrease the surface of the racetrack, and not only does NASCAR need that surface, but IndyCar also needs that surface as well. And if you move the pit road in – well, then you're going into the pagoda, into the infield grandstands as well. And you've seen the Indianapolis pagoda. That's a building that's not going to be touched or moved. So I think Roger Penske has a very interesting situation on his hands. Do we decide to lower the pit road speed from 55 miles an hour to a more manageable speed limit on pit road? I mean, I think that's the only way we can move forward. These instances have only happened so infrequently that there's the benefit of not doing anything, because these guys are all professionals, and with no practice time, these Cup Series drivers, you know, they don't have pit road speed limit. They can't enter their box and exit their box and get prepared with the style of pit road that they go to. Especially experienced drivers, they know it, but the new drivers like the Christopher Bells, I mean, they've only raced to Indy a couple times, and that's been in the Xfinity series. It's a different level between Xfinity and Cup. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days with that issue. But it's just, it goes to show that NASCAR has made significant improvements in safety to make sure that no one was seriously injured or anything that led to death. Because Denny Hamlin's wreck, if that happened in 2000, we could be talking about a completely different story.
We are speaking with Colin Besters, a NASCAR insider, one of their newest employees who is based out of the Florida Panhandle, worked on the same radio station that I got my start on. So I'm glad to share that background. Colin, my man, great to talk to you, buddy. I'm glad to have you on the air. I'm so, so happy for you and proud of you for your newest accomplishment. And, again, looking forward to have you on the show many, many times to talk motorsports as we continue forward, man. Congratulations, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Rob. And I don't know how much time you got. I know you're probably up against it, but I want to know your opinion on Peter King's tweet about the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. I thought that was very interesting over the weekend.
Yeah, Peter King tweeted out that the hot dog eating contest was a celebration of gluttony and sin when so many people around the world have such a difficult problem. And look, here's what I'll say, Colin. My man's heart is in the right place, right? Like, I understand where he's coming from, and I completely get it. His heart is in the right place. But at the same time, to me, that is like having a car on fire careening off the side of a cliff and complaining that the decoration hanging from the rearview mirror isn't good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I get where you're going. Your heart's in the right place. But what you are complaining about is just, in today's day and age, has just little to no importance at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the same argument that's been made every single July 4th around the hot dog eating contest, that this is disgusting and it's a sin, it's full of gluttony. But I think Peter King, like you said, his heart was in the right place. Probably shouldn't have said it. It's an opinion that's been said over and over again for years and years. Thank you for having me on, Rob.
Colin, my pleasure. You can follow Colin Bester on Twitter at TheColin with two L, C-O-L-L-I-N, Best, at TheColinBest on Twitter. Make sure you toss him a follow. He is going to be a go-to voice for the Rob Brown Show on motorsports right here in the upstate. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a bow on this bad boy and then head to Twitter trending topics. That's coming up next on the Rob Brown Show. And
after the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
As well as we could have expected.
Gotta love technology, man. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, we're figuring out. I mean, at least it's happening at the end of the show and not the beginning. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But do me a favor, if you will, take Steve and Gerald's comments off the air and let me know what they are, and I'll be happy to address them on the air as we head towards the end of the show with just about 8 minutes left to go. And again, my apologies for the technical difficulties ongoing here on the Rob Brown Show. I do apologize for that. Don't know what exactly is going on with the little machine here, but it has decided that it wants the rest of the day off. So apparently we're going to have to give it the rest of the day off because I don't know what there else is to do. We will have Captain Tony and Mr. Robert, our techno whizzes there at the Radio Ranch. I'll be in contact with them as soon as the show is over to get that little problem worked out. But in the meantime, again, I do apologize for the technical issues. And of course, it happens as soon as we get a couple of folks who want to come on the air. So we'll get Steve and Gerald's thoughts off the air. And I will address them coming up here in just a minute from right now as we head towards the end of the show. This is traditionally where we would do our Twitter trending topics segment. But again, just a little bit of catastrophe going on to wrap up the show. So we will end it here this way. 844-477-3776. But again, we're having some issues with phones right at the moment. So if you'd like to call in and give Tim your thoughts off the air, I'll be more than happy to address them on the air. You can also tweet me at the Rob Brown Show, at the Rob Brown Show on Twitter, or you can get at me on the Facebook at ESPN Upstate, facebook.com/ESPN Upstate. And of course, on our Twitter page at ESPN Upstate as well. The website, ESPNUpstate.com, is available for you as well on my email, robbrown@ESPNUpstate.com, robbrown@ESPNUpstate.com. If you'd like to check in that direction, you can do it as well. Again, NHL restart is a go. The NHL Players Association and the NHL owners have reached an agreement on return protocols. I told you last week that I thought the best idea for the NHL would be to host all of the teams together in Canada, a country that has done exceptionally well in terms of mitigating the spread of COVID-19. And the NHL has indeed followed that suggestion and will host Edmonton and Toronto will host as the NHL's two hub cities, one for the east, one for the west, followed all the way back down and through with the Stanley Cup playoffs taking place entirely in Canada as well. So there's some of that breaking news. We mentioned the Washington Redskins are looking at changing their name. They have launched an exploratory committee, which will look into the feasibility and alternatives for the Redskins name. Adam Schefter tweeting out that that announcement wouldn't be made if there was not going to be a move made towards a name change. So the D.C.-based NFL team will looks like soon have a new name. Ron Rivera, the new head coach, former Carolina Panthers coach, came out over the weekend and said that he was very much looking forward to a name change and thought that there was the possibility, the potential for that name change to take place before the 2020 NFL season even begins. So we may see a new team as a whole playing at FedEx Field. The reaction to that has been mixed. A lot of people feel very good about that. A lot of old school Redskins fans not thrilled with that decision as a whole. So we'll watch as that news story continues to break. The Cleveland Indians following suit in that regard as well, saying that this will likely be the final season under which the baseball team based in Cleveland plays under the Indians moniker. The Atlanta Braves had come out and said that they are not looking at changing the name of that franchise. In fact, quite the opposite, that they are committed to maintaining that moniker. And we will see what all of those potential changes lead to sometime in the near future. Jimmy Johnson tested positive for the coronavirus before the race this weekend at Indianapolis, so he did have to sit. His swan song of a season not going as well as he had hoped that it would, apparently. Obviously, he has had to miss that race and will likely miss the race this upcoming weekend in Kentucky. So we'll keep on that. That being said, I know, Tim, you were taking the comments of Steve and Gerald off the air. Do we have some input from those two?
Yes, I got Steve wanted to talk about the Redskins and the Native American issue, and he basically said, "Why leave it up to us to keep on bouncing back and forth between what is racist, what is not, all that kind of stuff, and just ask the Native Americans, take a poll from them, and basically get their input on it."
Yeah, I know that there is actually that's been done in the past, and it's the results. And again, I don't claim to know everything. I haven't done a full-fledged deep dive into the results of that. I know that the couple of surveys that I have read have led to the belief that it is it's a pretty split opinion. There is a non-insignificant portion of the indigenous community that does not take offense to the name, and there is a non-insignificant member portion, I guess, of the indigenous community that does take offense to the name. The spot that I come from is basically, hey, look, whether or not it is offensive to you is subjective, and that's up to you. But that name, by definition, is a racial slur. You can go back and read the appearance of that word in historical context, and it's never been used or utilized or said as a positive, right? Nobody's ever said it as a sign of respect and endearment. It's always been used from a position of dominance or supremacy. So I understand that premise. I get that premise, and you're certainly you're right in feeling that it really should be up to the indigenous community whether or not they are offended by that name. But at the end of the day, that term is a racial slur and has always been used that way. So again, everybody's got the right to feel their own way. I, for one, am happy to see that name changed based on the historical context of the name. It comes down to where the NFL stands right now, and they feel like it's time to move on. So we'll address that more tomorrow. We can continue with that conversation at a later date, but we have got to end the show. My man Mark Ryan is up next. All Sides with Mark Ryan is next up right here on ESPN Upstate. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Tim, I appreciate it, buddy. Great to talk to you today, man. Appreciate all the hard work as always, sir.
Thank you, Rob. I'll see you tomorrow, man.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Y'all have a fantastic rest of your day. We'll talk to you later. It's the Rob Brown Show on ESPN Upstate. Later.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.